The Eagles are one win over the New York Giants away from a home playoff game as they beat the Dallas Cowboys 17-9.
Oh my goodness.
The Eagles took care of business against Dallas and control their destiny in the NFC East. But can they keep it up in January? Plus, the worst teams in the NFL duked it out on Sunday, and the Bengals emerged with the number one pick. How Cincinnati won by losing, and whether New York and Miami will regret winning. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, December 23rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Bill, our long national nightmare is over. It looks like somebody is going to win the NFC East. And it appears that that team will probably be Philadelphia after beating the Dallas Cowboys 17-9. They have pulled ahead in the most depressing division in football. Is the race finally over?
No.
No. Bill Barnwell is a senior writer at ESPN and the host of The Bill Barnwell Show.
There's still that one last gasp from the monster. It's week 17. The NFC East is still up for grabs because the Eagles are in first place, like you said. But if they lose to the Giants and the Cowboys beat Washington in week 17, the Cowboys actually go back on top and win the NFC East. ESPN's Football Power Index gives the Eagles a 72% chance of winning the division, but it's not finished yet somehow.
All right. Well, let's back up, because going into this season, the Eagles looked like the pretty clear favorite to win it all. They were, in fact, amongst some people, maybe myself included, a trendy Super Bowl pick. But it's not hard to see why, right? I mean, Carson Wentz was finally healthy. The front office had gone out and bolstered the wide receiver core and the pass rush. They looked deep along the trenches, which was really how they went out and won the Super Bowl against New England. But by week 13, they were 5-7, and they suffered a humiliating loss to the Miami Dolphins. Before we get to what went right today, what went wrong this season?
So going back to week one, injuries were the biggest thing that hit this team. Their most prominent additions on both sides of the football were free agent defensive lineman Malik Jackson and former Eagles wideout DeSean Jackson, who they traded for from Tampa Bay. Both those guys went down injured in week one. They played a total of one game afterwards. The Eagles had four starters on injured reserve heading into the Cowboys game. At different points this year, they were down their top three running backs, their top three wide receivers, their top two left tackles, and their top three cornerbacks. It's really hard to win games when you're playing guys who are off the street. The Jackson injury really hurt the Eagles, I think, more than they were expecting. Which is interesting because when you build an offense, it's not really just about just getting talented players. It's actually having players who fit in complementary ways to one another. And with Jackson injured and Alshon Jeffrey less than 100%, the Eagles didn't have anybody who scared teams downfield. So I think maybe the thing we got wrong looking at this Eagles team from afar is that they were really dependent on offense on a 32-year-old wide receiver who hadn't played a full season since 2013. And granted, I don't think anybody expected him to get hurt in the first game of the season, but that's how it broke for the Eagles.
Well, as the Eagles were losing, Bill, the Cowboys were also losing, keeping them in the running. And I think at some point, not very long ago, it became clear to everyone that this race for the NFC East was all leading up to this one game.
We're motivated enough. You know, there's a lot at stake for this game, obviously, with the NFC East and, you know, a lot of pride and, you know, the fan investment in this game as well. You know, there's a lot going on.
How did Philadelphia pull it off?
I know that the story after the game was basically just that Jason Garrett seemed to hand the Eagles the game, but there was more to it than that, I think. Really, what the Eagles were able to do is stop the Cowboys from doing the things they did when the Cowboys blew them out by 27 points in week seven. First game, the Cowboys were 9-for-15 on third and fourth down, which is really good. They've been one of the best third down offenses in football all season. On Sunday, they were 4-for-16 on third and fourth down. That's their second worst performance of the year.
Standing in the gun, snap is back, four-man run. rush, well protected. Deep down the middle, too high for Cooper, incomplete.
Eagles just tackled really well. It wasn't like they had some genius philosophy. They just didn't make a lot of dumb mistakes on third down. And the Cowboys' weapons didn't really play very well in this game. There were a bunch of drops. The Eagles recovered that Tony Pollard fumble. That really saved them 3 points because the Cowboys would have kicked a field goal on 4th-and-1 in that situation. And then Carson Wentz's fumbling issues have been a big problem for the Eagles this year, even last week against Washington. But he was strip sacked for Dallas's only sack in this game. And Wentz just happened to fall on the football. It's all lost in the shuffle. We don't think about those things after the game. But if the Cowboys recover both those fumbles, they probably can kick a game-winning field goal on the final drive instead of having to score a touchdown.
So going forward, assuming they beat New York, Philadelphia will be the number 4 seed in the playoffs. What do you think their chances are?
I'm really optimistic about bad teams winning their divisions for some reason. I always think about the 2010 Seahawks, who were a laughingstock, really, nationally, when they won the NFC West at 7-9. And I think you know what happened next. They went out, they played the Saints as enormous underdogs at home, and we saw a Seahawks victory. The Eagles have a very reasonable shot of winning one playoff game because currently, as the 4th seed, they're in line to play the 5th-seeded Seattle Seahawks, who are getting brutalized by injuries. They're probably going to have to sign somebody off the street who started running back for them in the playoffs. It might be Marshawn Lynch. So it really is going to be a matchup of two teams who have been absolutely annihilated by injuries this season, and it might just come down to who's healthier.
I feel compelled to note here that Marshawn Lynch's mom did tweet an article about the Seahawks needing a running back. So just putting that on the universe. Well, back to the subject at hand. This was obviously a great win for the Eagles. I mean, not only did they get to celebrate the upset victory, but they also got to bask in reports of the Cowboys plane being stuck in Philadelphia. I believe it's taken off by the time this comes out. But in some ways, I do wonder if this was a bit of a Pyrrhic victory for Eagles fans, because the fact that Dallas actually lost makes it seem all too real that Jerry Jones is probably going to actually move on from Jason Garrett now.
I don't know. I think Jason Garrett was going to get fired either way, but I think Kellen Moore's future is way more interesting. The Cowboys offense really improved this year in Moore's debut, and the Cowboys have a history of letting talented young offensive minds leave. Almost 20 years ago now, they let Sean Payton leave as their passing game coordinator for the New Orleans Saints. They've regretted it ever since. Do the Cowboys promote Moore as an inexperienced first-time head coach, or do they run the risk of letting the next Sean Payton walk out the door?
Speaking of losing, after the break, we're going to talk about the Bengals, Dolphins, Giants, and Washington, and who really won this weekend.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Sanders is ready. The snap, the put down, the swing of the leg, the kick is up.
It's good.
It is good. The Dolphins win, and the Bengals have the first pick in next year's draft.
Bill, on Sunday, we had 2 games between some of the NFL's worst teams, Miami and Cincinnati, and New York and Washington. Both games went to overtime, which I found weirdly compelling in a sort of rubbernecking kind of way. But Miami and New York both won the games. However, knowing that these teams are all aiming to pick at the top of the draft, who really won?
Who really won from these four teams on Sunday? I think the Bengals won because they got to tank, but simultaneously they got to look like they were trying really hard in the process. Coming back from 15 points down, they score a touchdown, get an onside kick, hit a Hail Mary.
Dalton back to throw, has time, looking, throws toward the end zone, into a crowd.
Oh, got it!
Dalton's 25-yard touchdown pass is caught by a leaping Tyler Eifert.
And then a two-pointer to tie the game and then lose in overtime. I mean, nobody has lost to the Dolphins in 2019 and made it seem strangely impressive and epic. But the Bengals did just that on Sunday.
So I was actually watching the afternoon games in the presence of a group of Bengals fans. And it was fascinating, Bill, because I think every single one of them had a different reaction to everything that was happening. And it got me thinking about just the level of cognitive dissonance fans of really, really bad teams feel. And I can't imagine what it must have felt like for Dolphins fans in particular, right? Because coming into this season, it was pretty obvious that this team was not built to win. And then they ended up winning a few games. Do you think that they'll regret that?
Strangely, no. I don't think it's actually going to come back to bite them. Because if you figure the Dolphins were tanking for Tua Tagovailoa, it might actually work out that they still get Tagovailoa. This is a team that started 0-5 and had an 89.1% chance of nabbing the first pick in the draft per ESPN's Football Power Index. But since then, they've gone a respectable 4-7. It's pushed them down the draft order. FPI now projects them to finish with the 5th overall pick in the draft. But the situation around the Dolphins has changed. Joe Burrow at LSU had an incredible season. He projects to be the first overall pick to the Bengals. The teams projected to pick after the Bengals at 1 and before the Dolphins at 5 are the Giants, Washington, and the Detroit Lions, all of whom have a quarterback and are set at that position for 2020. Tagovailoa suffered a serious hip injury that might discourage teams from trading up to grab him, might even encourage him to leave school. So if the Dolphins wanted Tua all along, there's a good chance they don't need to get him at 1. They might be able to get him at 5.
You mentioned the Giants. Going into this weekend, it seemed plausible that, much like you're saying, Miami might just get fortunate because of sort of circumstances. New York might do the same. In some ways, actually, it reminded me of what happened last year where San Francisco didn't need a quarterback, but they were picking 2nd. And because the team above them, Arizona, did need a quarterback, they got the best pass rusher in the draft, Ohio State's Nick Bosa. This year, the best pass rusher in the draft is Ohio State's Chase Young, who the Giants would very much like to have. But alas, they won.
You think this is a burn, Mina, but the good news is the Giants have trouble at every position. So adding a defensive end would help, but they could get help just about anywhere with the 3rd or 4th overall pick. I mean, there's a really interesting thing here with the Giants in that you mentioned Pyrrhic victories earlier, and the Giants lost 9 straight games with Pat Shurmur, and it seemed like Pat Shurmur was going to get fired. Then they won 2 straight against 2 of the worst teams in football, and the Dolphins and Washington. Let's say they either stay competitive, maybe even beat the Eagles in an upset in Week 17. That might be enough for Pat Shurmur to keep his job for another year, and that might be a Pyrrhic victory for Giants fans. It's one of those wonderful quirks of NFL ownership when owners can make a profit and really don't have to pay any attention to their teams. A coach who loses 9 straight and then finishes the year hot is likely to keep his job, but a coach who does well in midseason and then loses 9 straight to end the year is probably going to get fired.
So the team that does now seem situated to get Chase Young is the team that lost to the Giants, Washington. Should their fans be happy?
As happy as they're going to be for the foreseeable future, sure. I mean, Dwayne Haskins played pretty well in the Giants game until he suffered an ankle injury, but Washington's in line to either draft Chase Young or trade the 2nd overall pick for a boatload of selections. I think in either scenario, it's going to help kickstart their rebuild. Getting Young across from Ryan Kerrigan should make Washington's pass rush a serious problem. I mean, there's underrated talent on that team on the defensive side of the ball. And we both know the NFC East is not exactly loaded with contenders. Washington could maybe move quicker than I think people are expecting if Chase Young turns out to be the prospect we're all hoping he's going to be.
When you step back and you look at all of this failure, or actually you look at the less successful failure that was the Miami Dolphins season, that, as you point out, might still result in them getting their guy, the guy they wanted all along. What does it make you think about tanking in the NFL in general? I mean, the Dolphins were thought to have one of the more explicit tanking campaigns in recent history, but it didn't play out that way.
Yeah, I mean, winning is hard in the NFL. Tanking might be even harder in some strange way. The Dolphins are Exhibit A. I mean, coaches and players just aren't working off of the same incentives as GMs and owners who are thinking about the bigger picture in the years to come. The Dolphins promoted Josh Rosen to their starting lineup. He was terrible for three starts. A tanking team that's united on every front would have kept him in for the rest of the year. But Brian Flores felt like he had to bench Josh Rosen to keep the credibility in his locker room. He restored Ryan Fitzpatrick to the job. Ryan Fitzpatrick was really good, strangely, and it cost them the first overall pick. And just the reality is, the NFL is so different from other leagues because it's a 16-game season. Basketball, where teams tank all the time, is an 82-game season. Major League Baseball is a 162-game season. Over that huge sample size, the worst team in the league is going to be the worst team in the league more often than not. It's hard to mistakenly be good over the course of a 162-game season. In a 16-game season, anything can happen. A team that is trying to fail can do better than a team that is trying to play well and just happens to be really terrible at it. And I think that's exactly what happened with the Dolphins and the Bengals in 2019.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to know that any of us can be a loser. Coming up, a story that breaks the glass ceiling and hits the bullseye. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. Last Tuesday, a 25-year-old British woman named Fallon Sherrick made history when she won her first match at the World Darts Championship in London. In defeating the 77th-ranked darts player, she became the first woman to ever take a round in the tournament. On Saturday night, she was a massive underdog versus the 11th-ranked player, and she did it again.
The bullseye to beat Cernovich. And sensation at the Alexandra Palace. She's done it again. Fallon Sherrick. She made history on the 17th of December. She's made history again on the 21st. She's only going to knock down the world number 11, Mensa Cernovich. 3-1. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume many of the people listening to this don't follow the darts world closely. So I'll explain why this is a huge deal. Sherrick, who was a 2,000-to-1 favorite to win it all before the tournament, is only the fifth woman to even compete at a world championship. The tournament has 96 spots, and it reserves two of them for women. And the ramifications for those women who make it in are huge, because there's a huge disparity in financial rewards. The prize for the women's only title is £12,000. The prize for the men's event is £500,000. Sherrick has won big before. She was a runner-up in the women's competition a few years ago, but her earnings have already soared this week. In the first round alone, she won at least £15,000, which is more than she's ever made before. On top of that, her profile has risen, and it's not hard to see why so many people are moved by her story. Until recently, Sherrick was working as a hairdresser.
She has a 5-year-old son who is autistic. And she says she plans to auction off her winning board from the first round and donate the proceeds to the National Autistic Society. She comes from a family of dart players, but she didn't start competing until she was 17 years old. And now, she's in the third round of the biggest tournament in the world. After her stunning 3-1 upset of Mensur Suljovic, she told reporters, "I've beaten two of the best players in the world. And if that doesn't say women can play darts, I don't know what does." Regardless of what happens in the next round, I think she's proved her point. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.